The Book of Life is the highly anticipated final installment of the best-selling All Souls trilogy by author Deborah Harkness. Strung together by a riveting plot involving witches, vampires, and demons, both good and evil, it's a fictional story peppered with touches of true history.
Deborah's book tour passes through Milwaukee on Monday night as she pays a visit to Boswell Book Company. She joins us now to tell us all about The Book of Life. Deborah, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I just finished The Book of Life. I have to tell you, I'm about 8 hours short of sleep because of it, but I think it was a good trade. How does it feel to have finished this huge trilogy?
It's a little bittersweet, to be honest. It's a wonderful thing to finish out what I set out to do, which was to provide a nice three-book trilogy in a time when many trilogies go to 8 or 9 volumes, but it's also a bit sad to sort of bid farewell to these characters that I've been living with for 5 or 6 years now.
Well, for those of us who haven't read the first two novels, can you catch us up a little bit? You've got the main character, Diana. She's a witch and a Yale historian. And you've got Matthew, her vampire lover and an Oxford biochemist. And they're searching for something called Ashmole 782, otherwise known as the Book of Life. Can you tell us about that? What is it?
Sure. I think of Ashmole 782 as the third main character in the book. And Ashmole 782 is a real missing alchemical manuscript at Oxford's Bodleian Library that I stumbled across when I was doing doctoral research back in the 1990s. And it's always kind of niggled at me in the back of my mind, you know, what might this book contain? So I took that experience as a historian, and I guess I sort of alchemized it into fiction by putting this book at the center of a controversy that exists between the supernatural creatures that surround human beings all the time in their daily life without us really noticing it, which is vampires and demons. And some people think that the Book of Life has the secrets of life in it. Some think that it has the first spells ever written. Some think it has the story of the origin of all species on Earth. And it's our hero and heroine are trying to figure out what is the truth about this volume as they track down its missing pages and try to reclaim it.
Well, you're a historian in real life. Diana is a historian, your main character. How much overlap was there between you and your character?
Diana and I do some of the same things. We both are historians. We both like to row. We both like to ride horses. But at the same time, we're very different. And in fact, most of my main characters have some part of me in them. So Matthew shares my love of wine, and Marcus Whitmore, his son, shares my love of sports cars. So it's all, you know, you kind of get to parcel yourself out among your characters.
Most historians, I imagine, don't go on to write best-selling fantasy series, though. How did that happen for you?
I had finished up my second work of academic nonfiction, and I was on vacation with my family in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, and wandered through an airport bookstore and was transfixed by an entire wall of books about supernatural creatures, werewolves, demons, witches, vampires, and I thought to myself, oh my, what happened while I've been in the library for the past 3 years? And I started to play around with the idea that if these creatures really did exist, like my 16th century research subjects thought they did, what would be their kind of struggles and challenges in our modern world? What would they do for a living? How would they date? What would they tell their neighbors? And that's where the story was really born.
It's interesting because it is a new take. There is a lot of vampire fiction out there, supernatural fiction in general, but you don't see so much with this academic bent where it's so much taking place within the walls of universities and with a intellectual thought process behind it. Did you sort of think of this at all ever as a, you know, the intellectual vampire book?
What I really wanted to do was to see if I could, I guess in a way, extend my classroom beyond the walls of the university and to see if I could make the things that I'm really passionate about, which is trying to understand why people in other cultures and in other times do the things they do. If I could make that interesting to a wider audience. And as a historian of science in particular, I'm fascinated with the synergistic links that have always existed between science and magic. And so it was sort of just, it touched on so many of the things that I was interested in that I really wanted to sort of take those ideas out for a spin and just see. Of course, at first I didn't really think anybody but me would ever read it. Maybe my mother was my first reader. But other than that, no one was ever going to read this. So it was a kind of pure pleasure of my own at first.
Well, in addition to writing this fantasy trilogy, you've also authored academic books, and including one on Elizabethan London and the Scientific Revolution. Can you talk a little bit about how your academic work informs and influences your creative work once you've got some of the classroom spilling over into the pages? How do you get the details in there?
Well, I guess in a weird way, I've been researching this All Souls trilogy and the kind of themes in the books since 1982, when I went away to college to be an undergraduate at Mount Holyoke College. And it was there that I really started on the path that led me to becoming an intellectual historian and a historian of science. And what always surprises me is just how hard it is for me still, even as a professional historian, to get all those details right. You know, my academic historians have a very narrow scope of expertise. And so when we veer outside of it, you know, when I'm talking about life in a modern laboratory or when I'm talking about more modern historical themes, it can be a real interesting challenge for me to get it right. And so I'm on a steep learning curve and I'm a student again, and there's really nothing more exciting than that.
Well, what real life historical elements did you want to make sure to incorporate into your fictional world?
That's a great question. What I wanted to do was to really try to capture a reality about the past that is more complicated than, wow, they wore funny clothes and there was no running water and no toilets, which, you know, historians are pretty clear about those things. I wanted to explore what it really felt like to be in the past and what it would have been like to be a modern feminist woman, as Diana is, being plunked in the middle of, you know, the end of the 16th century, where the rules were very different for women and the things we take for granted about being women, being able to be outspoken, being able to work outside the home, were really problematic and could land you in a whole lot of trouble. So often the past is romanticized in fiction or what we see on television or on movies. So I really wanted to have a kind of authentic feel to it based on what I think the past was like.
And you bring some fictional characters who meet real-life people from history. Who pops up in the trilogy from the real world?
Well, the character of Matthew Claremont was actually based on a real Elizabethan poet named Matthew Royden, who is best friends with the likes of Philip Sidney and Christopher Marlowe and Sir Walter Raleigh and Thomas Harriot. And he was a fascinating, enigmatic character that I tripped over when I was working on my master's thesis at Northwestern. And Matthew Royden was a spy for Queen Elizabeth I. And so as a result, like with most spies, we don't really know all that much about him. And this is the great thing about history and fiction, is that where my history runs out, and I can't say anything more really about Matthew Royden because I lack evidence. As a fiction writer, I get to make it up. And so that's really fun for me.
Well, there are some loose threads when you get to the end of the trilogy. And among them, what happens to one of my favorite characters, the vampire Galloglass? Do you have any plans to write more about the characters from this world?
Right now, my plan after the tour is to go back into the classroom for spring semester and then use next summer vacation to think of what my next moves will be. I know I have a lot more stories to tell, both nonfiction and fiction, and I'm going to take a little bit of a break before I figure out which one comes next. But I have to say that, you know, Galloglass is sort of large and loud and bossy, so I wouldn't be surprised if he pokes his head up and demands.
Excellent. That's great news. That's what I wanted to hear. Well, Deborah, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Veronica. It was a pleasure.
We've been speaking with Deborah Harkness, best-selling author of the All Souls trilogy, and the final book in the series is called The Book of Life. Deborah will be at the Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee on Monday night at 7 p.m. You can find more information at the Central Time Facebook page.